Good morning, DFW. It is Sean and RJ here on 105.3 The Fan. I'm RJ Choppy. He is Bobby Belt, Peyton, and Caitlin alongside halfway through the show today, getting you to that weekend. And perhaps more, you know, more vacation time for you if you've got it, because next week is New Year's Eve, New Year's Day.
Oh, I got my vacation time all lined up. Super Bowl week, draft week.
Super Bowl week.
Oh, yeah, draft week.
You're taking off Super Bowl
opening game of the season next year.
Oh.
Oh, I'm lining it up. Thanksgiving games.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good stuff, Bob.
Because, you know, Peyton, he had to take off because of night games.
Yeah, he did. He did.
So, well, I proposed Monday, so, you know, that's why I took off.
Again, what'd she say? What did she say?
Well, it was the fourth time she said yes, so.
The fourth time? The
first three times she said no. Finally, she said
yes. Oh. Oh, okay.
Did she really say no?
No.
Oh.
Was it a thought in your mind ever when no. you did it, when you proposed?
Oh, no.
Look at me. Look at you.
Come on.
Kristen saw the bank account.
Yeah. Look, she she knew she was getting rescued.
All right. Yeah. She was getting rescued.
Oh, man.
Yeah. From a life of mediocrity.
Oh, you're the white knight. You're the white for a life of
sounds
mediocrity.
Sounds about white.
Yeah, you are the white.
It's just going to be Shaw drops all day.
Yeah. People are loving it. People are loving it, Peyton. Keep them coming. Let's say, before we get to Cowboys roster building, let's pick the game this week. They do play Philadelphia this weekend.
Likely without Jalen Hurts.
Likely without Jalen Hurts. So that throws a wrench into the whole thing.
It does.
To me, if Jalen Hurts plays, I'm picking Philadelphia. If Kenny Pickett plays, I'm picking the Dallas Cowboys. So as of right now,
no,
I'm assuming that Hurts does not play. So I'm going to say the Cowboys win this one 20-13.
Okay. I think that, boy, this is, by the way, and you'll hear Mike McCarthy again here at 8:40. Do you think he sounded like a guy without a lot of pressure? Didn't he sound
McCarthy?
Loose? Yeah, didn't he sound loose? And
he did sound loose. He sounded, let me say, he sounded at peace.
I think he thinks he's coming back. I don't know if he's been told that, but I think he believes he is.
I think he believes he is. Yes. He may not have been told that, but.
But I think that's what he is reading.
And right, and you know what may have happened is.
Because that was as loose as we've heard him all year.
Perhaps without Jerry telling him, maybe Jerry is. Or somebody has contacted his agent asking for a meeting.
He's just, yeah.
A schedule meeting.
It struck me that he felt confident. Now, look, I still think that Philadelphia does a lot of things really well. I don't think Philly wants to lose to Dallas under any scenario. I think they're going to try hard, especially after Micah talked about how much he hates them recently. And so I think that this is a game where they just lean into Saquon Barkley and take advantage of that. And Philly's defense is really, really strong. They can pose a lot of challenges for Dallas's offense. So I'm going to pick Philadelphia in this game. I'm going with a low scoring game. I'm going to go 20-17 Philadelphia. But again, if Philly doesn't feel like they have much to play for or they're a little lackadaisical, it would not surprise me at all if Dallas won this game, just like we were talking about last week with Tampa Bay. But I'm going to pick Philadelphia.
All right. Peyton, what do you think?
It all comes down to, like you said, RJ, if Hurts plays. If Hurts does not play, I really like how the Cowboys have been playing lately. Cooper Rush gets another crack at Philadelphia. Remember last year he played on the road? I think Eagles got out to like a 24-0 lead. Then the Cowboys came back, almost won that game. But I have the Cowboys winning 24-20 if Hurts does not play.
Wow, you like the over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And by the way, this is going to be a rain game.
It is.
This is a rain game.
I love the under 14-10
here. Now,
I love the under in this one, baby.
So they were practicing wet ball drills and everything else. This strikes me as a running game here.
Okay. Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, I like the under in this one. The under over under is 39. 39 Ooh. Change. It's a low one. There's two. There's a couple this week that are low totals. So I picked the Cowboys 20-13.
I got 20-17 Eagles.
And Peyton
24-20 Cowboys.
24-20 Cowboys. Okay.
And also, I need to make sure that we don't get the eighth victory of the season for the Cowboys.
Oh, I
need
I have to lose this next two. Baby.
Why?
Because I'm supposed to shave my head bald if they win eight games.
That's right. Well, they're going to beat
Washington. I just said it very flippantly on the air. I was like, yeah, this is all shit, my ball. And now I'm committed to it.
All right.
So are we supposed to do that on the air?
Yeah, I think so. I got a barbell come up and do it for us.
Walt?
No.
Oh,
somebody else.
No. Okay. All right. So we've got a, and get your picks in on the Frankel & Frankel Injury Attorneys fan text, 877-881-1053, 877-881-1053. Over on the YouTube, Kid Cowboy 66 says 33-23 Dallas. William Bernie says Philly 30, Cowboys 20, no CD is a killer. That's the other thing we got to remember here. There is no CD Lamb in the next two games, and that's significant. All right, so get those in on the fan text, and we'll read those out as we get to the end of the segment. Chop, we were talking about this earlier this week, and we previewed it a little bit earlier today, too. Is the fact that Dallas is playing better with injuries and worse players, quote-unquote, is this evidence that the Cowboys are good at acquiring talent, but they're bad at team building?
Well, I've always thought that they were good at acquiring talent. I don't think, though, that the team has ever, at least recently, cared about positional value. And they worry more about whether a player is good versus the position of importance. And that's why they drafted, like, linebackers an awful lot and running backs during the Garrett era. And, like,
it doesn't I don't think it's the worst philosophy in the world to say, get me a good player.
It's not a bad philosophy. Yeah, it's not the worst philosophy. What it does is it gives you really good balanced rosters. You know, it gives you really good top end talent. What sometimes it does, though, is it leaves you open at areas of vulnerability and weakness. And, you know, am I a need drafter? In a way. If you have a quarterback, you're taking the quarterback in the first round. Right. If you have a running back, you're not taking a running back in the first round. You know what I mean? So, like, there are certain situations where need is okay. But, you know, I mean, if the Cowboys put more emphasis on positional value, I think that they would be a better built roster. I think they're a good talent. They're a talented team that doesn't always play well together. They're good enough to win games. I think everybody talks about, you know, why they don't ever make the conference championship game. Like, I think you can look at how they're constructed and draw kind of some comparisons there.
Yeah, here's the thing is that they clearly, and I've got to get the exact number that we're looking at here. But if you were to just look at over the last, you know, decade, Dallas is going to be way at the top
of in Pro terms Bowls of number of
Pro Bowl players.
They've done a tremendous job.
They are way up near the top in terms of all of that. But the question does, I think, present itself that says, why did things come together so much better after you got ravaged with injuries?
Mm-hmm.
Why, when you were missing so many big-time players on defense, when you were Tyler Guyton got taken out of the lineup, Zach Martin got taken out of the lineup, Dak Prescott got taken out of the lineup, why did you play better football? Jake Ferguson out. Mm-hmm. Why did you play better football?
Mm-hmm.
That's a concern, I think. Like there's two ways you can look at this. This is either great for your football team, and you look at it and say, well, this is evidence right here that they're a team that can step up, next man up, do that, and that's the positive outlook on it. The negative outlook on it is, are you not properly evaluating what your team is if they play better when they've got worse players in there? And Tyler Guyton is a great talent, I think. Do you know how to make him fit? Chauncey Golston is really playing well right now.
Mm-hmm.
Took four or five years for you to figure out how to play Chauncey Golston.
Right.
It took you 5 years and 10 weeks to realize Rico Dowdle should be starting. It took you an extended period of time to realize Byron Jones should be a cornerback, not a safety. And so when you look at that and go, their talent evaluation is dead on. Their ability to turn that into a cogent contender and a strong contender and a legitimate team, the old Scott Pioli line, it's not the best 53 players, it's the right 53 players. The inability to do that consistently is problematic. And who does that then fall on? Does that fall on coaches making it fit? Does that fall on front office finding the right way to have people fit in?
Well, I think the job of the front office is to find players that fit the coaching staff.
Or just in general.
Or, you know, it's got to be a give and take because you also need to have the coach find a system that fits the players.
Is Dak Prescott more talented than Cooper Rush?
Yeah, he's more talented.
Is Tyler Guyton more talented than Chuma Edoga?
I would assume so.
Is Zach Martin more talented than Brock Hoffman?
Oh, yeah. Well, at this stage of his career...
Even still, I think skill set, he's better. I think his skills are better. Is Luke Schoonmaker better than Jake Ferguson?
No.
Is, you know, you can go down the list here. Is Chauncey Golston better than DeMarcus Lawrence?
Oh, no.
So why, when those factors, all these better players, why don't they play well with each other? Is that a player issue? Is that a personnel department issue? Or is that a coaching issue?
I think it's all of the above. I think you have to put some on all of the above.
Then do you think that in their drafting process, they're not doing enough to figure out how do you fit? Because people routinely complain about the idea of scheme fit and other things. Mm-hmm. But are they doing enough to figure out culture fit? Culture fit or chemistry? Does chemistry matter?
I don't know during the draft process that you can figure that out, right?
No, but for instance, they've always done one of their big rules consistently, and it bit them, it seems like, on Jalen Tolbert. One of their big rules consistently has been, I need big-name programs. I need players from big-name programs.
That was a Parcells thing. Parcells brought that here.
It's a thing for this team.
Yeah, right, I know, but he brought that here with him.
Well, and a lot of people look at it and go, okay, is it because I need to see what they are against level of competition? That's part of it. Another big factor is, are you ready for this? Are you ready for Dallas?
It's a big part of it.
Because if you played it in big-time SEC games at LSU against Alabama and different things like that, that's a better indicator that you're ready than South Alabama.
All right, I'm going to give you... So this is an example. Parcells brought this. But they had it here before, too. You know, they did. But most teams draft a lot of guys from smaller schools. But if you go back to the Campo era, I mean, they had West Texas A&M and Southern Miss.
Right, but not at the top of the draft, though.
No. Virginia Union, Sacred Heart. I didn't even know Sacred Heart had a team.
That was the hospital in Scrubs.
Right, absolutely. But then you get the Parcells. First year, sixth round took Zuriel Smith from Hampton.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to 2004, seventh round took Patrick Creighton from Northwest Oklahoma State. Other than that, it was almost all SEC or Big Ten. And then you get to 2005, and the only one was a sixth rounder. It was Justin Berrio from Ball State. Oh, I'm sorry, DeMarcus Ware from Troy.
You're a man who covered those teams.
Yeah.
The fact that you knew how to say Justin Berrio's name.
Right. And then you get to the following year in 06. That was Parcells' last draft. They did buck the trend. Hatcher from Grambling in the third round. That was really, obviously DeMarcus. But DeMarcus Ware was clearly everyone in America had him as a highly touted player.
Yeah.
In the first round, period. Yeah. So, you know, McQuiston at Weber State. But, it was... Parcells had he brought that, hey, we're going to go for big school guys. We're not going to be sitting, we don't want to take a kid from North Alabama in the second round all too often.
Yeah.
It's just not a smart way to go.
No, and I do think it's an interesting discussion or an interesting thought process of, have you figured out, you've clearly figured out the players and the talent. Have you figured out how to put it all together? Because right now we would say no, that they don't know how to put that all together to a complete team. Some of the thoughts on the Franklin Frankel injury attorney's fan text. 214 says, the problem with the Cowboys doing better with second string players is simply put, as the second string trust the play calling and are willing to run the plays as they are designed. When you have talent on the field, it's easier for talented players to trust their talent as opposed to trusting the play calling. It's really that simple. 520, I love this take, Bobby. You're welcome. And I think this falls on Jerry. It is the only thing that hasn't changed. Jerry is the problem. 405, Cowboys need to get younger and a new coaching staff. Quit trying to develop players over a period of years. Play in free agency a little more,
I guess. Play in free agency. There you go. All right. That's a little bit of talent acquisition from Bobby Belt here on 105.3 The Fan. We started the Rangers off season as we switched to baseball wondering, boy, they got no money to spend. And we are going to end this on track for another every other year Bruce Bochy World Series run. Go talk about that coming up next on The Fan. Do the Texas Rangers have a top five lineup in Major League Baseball right now? I was listening to a podcast called the Just Baseball Podcast. I think they do generally a pretty good job. They're generally on top of things. And they were talking about the lineup. You know, when you factor in, you got Simeon and Seager and Berger and Jock Peterson and Young and you know, hopefully Evan Carter returns to what he was in, at the end of 23. And obviously Wyatt Langford and Adolis and who we missed. Oh, you got Heim and Higgy as the backup catcher, good backup catcher. And they went down the list. They said the only ones they could definitively say were better than the Rangers were the Dodgers, Phillies, and Braves.
Top blank lineup in Major League Baseball. Catching tandem is Heim and Higgy, Berger at first, Semien at second, Seager at short, Young at third with Josh Smith filling in. The outfield left to right could be Langford, Evan Carter, Adolis Garcia, Jock is the DH, and then that bench is Josh Smith, Ezekiel Duran, Higgy, and Leody Taveras.
I mean, what lineups are you taking over that? Dodgers, obviously.
Dodgers, Atlanta, a healthy Atlanta I'm taking.
Phillies?
Close.
With Kepler now, and I know that's not like a major needle mover, but it is. Yeah, again, the Castellanos-Kepler platoon, I'm on board with here. I would go Rangers over Yankees, but I think it's a conversation to be had, for sure.
San Diego, I'd probably side with Texas's lineup over San Diego's.
It's top five or right on the fringe of top five.
Whew. Now, that puts them, if they're top five, that puts them top two in the AL.
Yes.
You know, the National League is the much better league right now.
Yep.
And that's why, you know, Soto going to the Mets was like, all right, you know, you get the more money, but like your road to the World Series is much more difficult than the National League today. Now, 5 years from now, that would completely change. But today, you know, it's, you know, if they're healthy, if they get a healthy DeGrom, right? Let's say they have a healthy DeGrom this year. You know, they're not only in the playoffs with ease, but I mean, who wants to face that rotation in the playoffs too? You want to face DeGrom and Eovaldi?
I love the confidence in the Rangers lineup here. I do. I think it's great. It's a lot of confidence to put into a lineup that was very disappointing last year, even when they were healthy.
It was terrible.
And there's still the question that we've got to ask. And you had asked this before last season. The idea of how many of these guys maybe had career years in 23?
Several of them did.
And that's the thing, is that it was like, well, I mean, how can you comfortably say that? Adolis Garcia is still relative, like, he's not young, but he's young in his career in terms of time put in at the major league level. Evan Carter was young. Josh Young was young. Jonah Heim is somebody that's developing. There was no reason to think that it was just going to be stunted there. And so you had all these reasons for optimism, but you correctly asked the question, is it possible these were career years? And last year made it look more and more like, oh, yeah, a lot of this was.
Nobody wants to talk about the fact that
they were 24th last year in OPS. And you're just going to say, oh, top five lineup, because they added Berger and Jock Peterson.
This is the issue is, you know, here's like the thing with Adolis that nobody wants to talk about, because he's the guy that I'm trying to think of how many players in DFW you just can't say anything negative about without getting fan backlash.
Is he one? You
think? Absolutely.
Ooh, I think there's a lot of people who are critical of him.
Not the Ranger blue blood fans.
A lot of times it's not even for performance. A lot of times it's for who they are. Like, for instance, you could never say anything. I used to get killed all the time for being critical of JJ Barea. People get so mad when you say anything negative about Barea.
When I first started doing the Mavs radio, it was Marquise Daniels.
Oh, dude, Marquise Daniels.
Couldn't say anything bad about
him. The original Linsanity.
Yes, you could not say a single thing bad about him. I was like, guys, you know. But Adolis has had 1 year where his OPS was higher than 756.
It's not great for a corner outfielder.
That is not a power guy.
I mean, there's definitely power there, but that's
not. But a power guy has an OPS over that.
Yeah, he is
an OPS on base plus slugging. It's a very easy stat to figure out, and it's one of the more important ones that are not getting too deep into the weeds. Like, you want to get deep in the weeds with X Woba, go ahead. It's, you know, I'm with you on that. I love it, but you know, or there's a million of them. But OPS is a simple one that's very easy for the average fan to figure out.
I mean, he makes more consistent contact.
He does.
He makes more consistent contact. He doesn't draw as many walks. But there are some similarities. I don't want Jared or somebody else screaming at me for what I'm about to say. I recognize these are different players. But there are some similarities to style of play, him and Gallo. Ton of strikeouts, lot of pop, not consistent enough. Adolis makes better contact more consistently. Oh gosh, it's not more. Even close.
Yeah, he's. I mean, his batting average is 40 points higher.
But he also doesn't walk as consistently as
right.
Gallo does. It's closer than a lot. Like, the gap between plate patience between Adolis and Gallo is closer than the contact discrepancy between Adolis and Gallo. But I'm just saying, in general, you're talking about a guy who, with the power that he has, he should be consistently like an 800 OPS.
He should be. So he
he'll
needs
be 32 next year.
And, you know, last year was, it was way worse. Batting average was, you know, 20 points below the previous year. On base percentage was 40 points below the previous year. Slugging percentage was 100 points below. OPS was 150 points below. OPS plus, which is your number, you know, a 100 is league average.
That's baseline, yeah.
Yeah, 100 is league average, OPS plus. In 2023, he was a 127. That was a career high. Last year, he was a 94. So he was below league average. 6%-ish below league average. So he's got to get better. There's no doubt about that. They scored as a team how many fewer runs last year?
Than the year before?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Probably 150.
200. 198 to be exact.
Yeah.
So basically everyone declined. They could have brought back everyone. This is a write-up from ESPN. They could have brought back everyone, but they probably did the right thing, shaking things up. Obviously, Berger trading, getting here, and then trading away Nate Lowe. Basically, you're swapping those two.
Which, by the way, Nate Lowe was, relative to OPS plus, was one of your better hitters last year.
Look, I think Nate Lowe got a lot of undeserved hate. I think Nate was a good player. We are going to look back. Nate came up with some big hits
late in
games. We're going to look back on this and say, man, having a guy who can just make contact with the baseball is a very valuable thing that is undervalued in the current analytics era. Jock Peterson and Higgy. And the common theme is power. Those three combined for 70 home runs last year. Right? Now,
by the way, over the last 40 games of the season last year, so the last quarter of the season, mm-hmm. Wyatt Langford had a 911 OPS.
It's great.
With 10 home runs. So you're
in
talking about
how many games?
40. So the last quarter of the season.
Okay, so that's a 40 home run year.
The 162 game average for Wyatt Langford with the last quarter of the season projected out would be 40 home runs, 32 doubles, 122 RBIs, and a 911 OPS. I mean,
sign me up. Now, the problem with Berger and Higgy is they don't get on base. 301 OBP for Berger, Higgy at 263, but Peterson at nearly 400.
Yeah.
Really, really helps. He's
a big clubhouse guy, too.
Yeah. Now, last year, Peterson's on base was 50 points higher than his career average. So that's probably not going to hit.
But he's consistently 100 points higher than his batting average.
Right.
He's patient.
Yeah. So you're going to have to get better production from Adolis, Semien, and Leody. And then health from Young and Carter. But the other thing is that they don't need to score the extra 200 runs. Let's say they just score 125 extra runs.
Yeah, and reduce the runs allowed. Just meet in the middle.
But you reduce your runs allowed by 50 or 60, and you're essentially recreating that year's offensive output because the pitching staff, with a healthy Jake for the whole year, theoretically would be better.
Yeah, here's what I'll say. They just need to make sure, and this is final thought for me, they need to make sure that they are not below league average in every hitting category like they were last year.
Absolutely.
Just be league average at the very least.
Very, very good. Just be league average. So there you go. A little Rangers talk here on Sean and RJ at 105 to the Fan. Mike McCarthy, Cowboys head coach, joins the show next to the Fan. Good morning, DFW. To Sean and RJ here on 105 through the Fan. I'm RJ Choppy. He's Bobby Belt, Paitlin, and Caitlin alongside. Sean is, what did I do?
Paitlin.
I didn't say that.
You said Paitlin and Caitlin.
I think I said Peyton.
Okay.
We'll go to the replay.
Yes.
Sean is back next week. And it is time, as we do every Friday here on the Fan, to be joined by the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Mike McCarthy. Morning, Mike. How you doing, pal? Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas. I hope everybody had a great week. You know, obviously Sean's having a great 2 weeks.
I know, right? Yeah, we had to worry about me last week, and then this week he's off. How did you handle Christmas at the McCarthy household?
Just family time. Just hung out with Jess and the girls, and got a little extra sleep. So it was a good day.
Nice.
Very, very family oriented.
So I wanted to ask you, I don't know if you saw last night's Thursday night game, and the schedule is so crazy this time of year. You had Wednesday games, and we don't have Wednesday games very often in this league. Like how difficult is this time of year to manage for a football coach?
Oh, it's a challenge. I mean, everybody has to go through it, but I think it's just like anything. It's it's what you believe in, and because. I think doing schedules now for almost two decades, you have to get the work done. I mean, that's your responsibility to make sure the team is prepared and trained to win the next game, particularly on Christmas week. But I've tried it different ways earlier in my career, and frankly, I was never comfortable with the players and coaches working on Christmas. We worked ahead, moved up everything as far as what we needed to do earlier in the week. So we worked Monday, Tuesday. Everybody was home for Christmas on Wednesday, and then we had a longer day yesterday, and we'll have a little longer day today. So we're still getting all the work done. But you could just see the appreciation and actually their energy, and that's been very consistent over my time, both in Green Bay and here in Dallas, that when you do give them that day off, the energy is incredible the next day.
Coach, we got the news yesterday that CeeDee Lamb is done for the remainder of the season. He's obviously been dealing with that shoulder issue and played a couple of really good games even with it. Just talk about his resilience and his toughness in the 5 years that you guys have spent together, because he's not a guy that is frequently talked about as being banged up or hurt, but obviously guys get banged up at the end of the season. So just talk about his toughness and the way that he's played through that.
Well, Bobby, you didn't even give me a follow-up on my Christmas schedule.
it was a great point. I thought you laid it all out there. I thought it was a great point.
I didn't get the memo. Are we on a script this morning or something? We got a bunch of things we got to knock out. But no, just kidding. CD, obviously, well, we all know what he means to our football team. And he's been playing, with the shoulder for some time, and when they had the scans and the examination, it just it was clearly worse than it's been. So the risk is too high to play this week. Even if this was if we were in week three, this would probably be the same decision. So it's important for him to shut it down and start rehabbing.
Coach, you talk about that Christmas schedule and just the positive energy.
You don't have to go back.
No. I'm tying it into my next question. I'm tying it into my next.
Bobby's got a conscience.
There you go.
You know better than that.
Coach, no, but when you talk about guys who need to step up over these last 2 weeks, because obviously you guys are playing now without the playoffs in sight, but guys who you would like to see really step up and take advantage of this opportunity with CeeDee down. Is this something, a good opportunity for Jonathan Mingo or Ryan Flournoy? How do you look at the guys who need to step up and show you something here in these final 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think clearly you can start with the young players. And I know the veteran players, they want to finish. And, you can start on offense. Some of the things that we've been doing well over the last month, starting with the offensive line. We didn't run the ball, this past week against the Buccaneers, the way we've been running it the 3 weeks prior. So I know that as a unit, the offensive line really wants to, have a good day there in Philadelphia, and it'll be a key to the victory too, going into that place too. So, but yeah, you can go right down the line with rookies. You know, I want to see Tyler Guyton, you know, take a step, Cooper Beebe, you know, all those guys. But this is such valuable, you know, work for all these players. I mean, you talk about the preseason being short, and there's nothing like game reps. There's nothing like game reps on the road. So, and there's nothing like game reps that lead to winning. So, I look at all of our guys that just have an opportunity to continue to play and keep playing to win, and it's something that we can build off in the offseason.
Mike McCarthy joining us here at 105 through the Fan. Just curious, when you're deciding to let a guy play or not when he's got an injury, and it doesn't matter if it's as a head coach or when you were part of other programs early in your career, how much of player input goes into that versus just the training staff?
Well, I think at the end of the day, every player is control of it. It's his body, and no one knows your body better than you do. So, it's not just a conversation for when an injury occurs. You know, it's because this time of year, you know, every player in this league is dealing with, you know, things that have accumulated over the course of a season. So, it's an ongoing conversation. You know, there's a reason why they do prehab. You know, they don't wait till they get hurt to go into rehab. So they're always working on their bodies. I mean, that's why we invest the time in that we do on the stay program on Fridays. It's the reason why these guys spend so much time on their own investing it. So, yeah. So that conversation, frankly, is ongoing. It's really the state of where they are, and if they can, you know, perform and go out and give us a chance to win as a team, and then they're part of that conversation to play that week.
Coach, I went back and tried to look at how many games you've coached where the team was officially eliminated, and it's less than 10. How different has this week felt?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's different. It really hit me, driving home after the Buccaneers game because it was such a punch in the gut. You know, because I was in the locker room when the Philadelphia and Washington game concluded, it's different. I've been fortunate because you're always playing, for a playoff spot this time of year. I think it's like anything. It's a time of adversity. It's a time where you're always preparing for change, adjustment, and emphasis, and that's always been the filter for growth that I believe in, and it's kind of put me into that mindset, earlier than normal.
How's Cooper Rush played differently that you've seen since the first time they played? You all played Philly.
Oh, I think Cooper's just more into a rhythm. Clearly, I mean, Philadelphia was the first start, and just the way the game started for him, he never really truly got into a rhythm. You could see it in his feet, but I think he's played really good football for us here, especially I thought the Buccaneers game was a game that was going to be a lot of uphill running because just the way they set their defensive front and the way they commit to stopping a run, I thought he did a great job of just really staying on his back foot, getting through his progressions, and getting the completions that we needed.
So, Coach, the last 17 games, full season worth, that you've had to play with a backup quarterback here, you guys are 12-5. I know you've said before that Marty Schottenheimer taught you the philosophy of don't think of plays, think of players, in terms of making sure the system fits your players rather than players having to fit your scheme or your system or whatever you want to do. Do you think that that's been the overriding philosophy that has gotten you guys to that, 12-5 record over those last 17, is the fact that, hey, this is a system and an offense that anybody can feel comfortable in regardless of when they step in?
Yeah, definitely, Bobby. I think clearly, it's a starting point philosophically. I don't think there's a question about that. But, I mean, there are so many factors and elements involved in dealing with the adversity of injuries. And just the credit really ultimately goes to the locker room. I mean, because the locker room has to accept the next man up mentality. And they have to stick, they got to keep the belief high, and because that's where the confidence comes. Because you win with confidence in the National Football League. You have no chance to be successful in this league if you don't have real confidence And I think our guys have done a really, really good job of that.
Mike McCarthy joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. He is brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. Saquon's having a tremendous year. I mean, he's always been a great player, but like, does he look any different than what he did when he was with the Giants?
Oh, I would say, I mean, physically, I mean, he's, you know, he's always been, you know, a gifted player, without a doubt. So I would say physically, I wouldn't say he looks any different, but he's more mature. He looks very comfortable in this offense. You know, this offense is built around the run, and, you know, he's the featured player, and, you know, and he's having a great year. I think what I appreciate about the way he plays is, you know, the way he hammers it up in there for the, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 yard consistent runs. And, but you tend to forget this guy can go the distance. You know, he has great breakaway speed and it's been a huge part of their success. Cause, you know, you look at these performances that he has, but it's almost weekly where he's banging a run for 30, 40, 50 yards. So, but yes, this is clearly the best, that I've seen him play, but he's always, I mean, there's a reason why he was a top draft pick. I mean, he's a very, very gifted player.
He's closing in on the NFL single season rushing record, Eric Dickerson's record that's stood for 40 years. Is that a point of competitive pride at all for your defense? You think of just like, hey, we're not going to help contribute to letting this guy break a record. We're not going to be part of this.
We're really not about the record. We're really just about, you know, keeping him in check and winning the game. We're not thinking about that. And you talk about a great Hall of Fame running back in Eric Dickerson. You know, it's a tribute to, you know, to any running back to even be in part of that conversation, because that's definitely a record that has stood for quite some time.
What is the mode of preparation, or how do you guys look at things when you've got a primary quarterback in Jalen Hurts who is dealing with an injury and you're trying to figure out who you're getting ready for? How do you split up that time preparing for two different quarterbacks who are very different stylistically?
Well, the good thing is you've played a lot against Jalen, so you feel like you have an understanding of how he plays, and obviously he had a big game against us in the first game, particularly getting out of the pocket. So, you really have to spend your time on Kenny Pickett, and just to make sure we're in tune, how we feel about him as a quarterback and how we feel they're going to use him. And, you know, there's a lot of tape in the Washington game because Jalen's injury was obviously very early in the game. So, yeah, that's just, just part of preparation. And, you know, and it's not against the law for them to go, play with two quarterbacks this week too, so I mean, you got to be ready for the whole crew.
I guess you don't have to worry about the tush push though, right?
I don't know about that. Yeah, I hope not.
It's a tough play. Hey, Coach, we appreciate it. Good luck on Sunday, and then don't party too hard on New Year's.
Oh, you bet. Happy New Year, everyone.
Mike McCarthy joining us here on 105 Through the Fan on Sean and RJ. Has the portal in college football worked out exactly as it should? And you're degenerate. We're going to make you some cash, as we have been doing all year long. We've been dominating. That's all coming up next, 9 o'clock hour on 105.3 The Fan.